Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, a very interesting conversation with artist, musician, stand-up comedian Tim Minchin. And that's coming in a second, plus the news. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. October is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Remember, if you connect it, protect it. Take proactive steps to enhance your cybersecurity. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. Every day we put our info at risk out there on the internet. You can miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they will send you an alert, but you're not going to have a problem because you're going to have the best. You're going to have LifeLock, right, Dawson?
Known to prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, LifeLock and see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
I wrote this song on an airport piano. I was the guy disturbing your journey from security to gate 23A. Maybe you noticed me. I wrote this song cause I had a spare hour. I was delayed trying to get back to my babies in Sydney, and I noticed the keys, so I'm writing the song. Women in SUV Porsches always look miserable.
Tim Minchin is our guest all the way from Australia. I think the album is called Apart Together. It's available November 20th, wherever you listen to music. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Congratulations on all the Tony nominations and Emmy nominations. Do I got Emmy? Oh, Grammy. I'm
no,
sorry.
Emmys,
Grammy.
Guys.
Grammy.
Oh,
Tony's. Yeah. Grammy's.
I feel like I'm due an Emmy. What do you have to do for an Emmy?
God, it is.
Don't ask Adam.
Yeah. It's crazy when you do hear about actors and Emmys and actors and Oscars, and you're like, yeah, he's been nominated 13 times, never won. Like, you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of that out there.
The Randy Newman effect.
Right.
The Randy Newman effect.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I mean, I do know that all those awards are actually just competitions to see who can kind of do the winning the competition the best. They're not meritocracies. I mean, that doesn't mean there's not merit to the people who win them, but it's a hell of a lot to do with how much schmoozing you can do.
Campaigning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of hate them. I like them when I win.
Then it's a meritocracy.
When I win, it's like, wow, all the bullshit obviously just went away this time.
I know, but it's kind of like in high school when you're trying to talk yourself out of the hot blonde cheerleader, like that empty head with a stuffed sweater. Who needs that? But everyone wants a fucker. Y'all want it. I get it. So
I think, you want. I think what you're saying is you want what the heart wants. Is that right?
I'm saying. Everyone wants that award, no matter what, yeah. Once they put you in the room. That's for sure.
I remember Stephen Sondheim won his first Tony Award, and he's sort of famously still pugnacious dude and, you know, has a very difficult relationship with Broadway, even though he's the greatest. And he just got up and went, I don't really care for awards, but it's nice to win one. And then got off again. I'm sure that wasn't his voice. That's just my standard.
That was not bad. I've met him, and that is not bad.
Well, he talks like that now. I don't suppose he did back then. Yeah.
Well, Tim and Gina. Gina is the toast of Broadway. She loves every musical. What is the status of Broadway? I know it's dark now, but financially, what's going on? Well, how's it going to work?
With Tim involved, it's much better, truly. I mean, huge, huge hits. People love wonderful music, much acclaim. So thank you for that.
That's a very nice thing to say. But it's pretty depressing, isn't it?
At
the moment, obviously. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, you assume in the long term all this stuff will recover, but in the short term it feels like a sort of devastating reboot where you lose all your hard drives and have to buy a new laptop.
The economics of doing a Broadway musical are pretty astounding, but when it works, when that works, like when you come up with that idea and it works and you can franchise it, it's got to be one of the most lucrative jobs you could ever have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy gamble, Broadway, because, Gina, I don't know if you know the stats, but it's something like 95% of musicals don't hit. Or, you know, like my second musical, Groundhog Day, which got, you know, 7 Tony nominations and won the Olivier Award for Best Musical in London and ran for, I don't know, on Broadway, 6 months or 8 months or something, lost everything. You know, like it lost everyone everything. So that's 8 months on Broadway. You think, well, that's surely you've made your money back. Nowhere near. We would have had to run for 3 years, you know. So it's crazy. But on the other hand, Matilda, which didn't make a huge amount of money on Broadway, but the very fact of it succeeding on Broadway meant, as you say, that it will be performed forever all around the world. And yeah, it's a good win to have had.
Do they have any plan or protocol for opening Broadway back up?
What are they talking about? June of next year? May or June?
Yeah. How do they know, though?
That's the next time it sounds like that's the next time they're willing to reevaluate and that people should just go ahead and kiss the winter and spring goodbye.
That's basically, it's the parenting version of ask your father.
We'll
and then
see.
You walk out of the room.
I'm
not committing to anything.
Maybe.
I'm not even listening. Just
although Gina, Kiss the Spring Goodbye sounds like a pretty good show, Gina.
Kiss the Spring Goodbye.
Yeah.
The chorus line.
Beautiful. We've done it.
All right.
Made our money.
Gina and Tim, what are the best Broadway musicals of all time? Give me top five. God. Start with the best. Move your way down to five.
It's Gina's question. I don't really know musicals.
Tim doesn't like musicals.
I find it hard to believe.
I've seen about 10 in my life. You know. maybe more. But I'm not a musical theater.
Well, I don't mean to play too much Ask His Rodeo, but I have to tell you, as far as new musicals go, Matilda has some of the most beautiful music I have ever heard in a Broadway show.
Love this podcast. Can I do this podcast every week?
I mean, Quiet is one of my favorite songs in the world.
Thanks,
it's such a beautiful musical.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Let's find that song. Quiet, did you believe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's a lot of great songs. But
Alec Baldwin loves that song, right?
Quiet.
What's that, Alec?
Quiet.
What'd you say?
That's it. He was my inspiration.
Let's ask Alec what he wants to hear.
Quiet.
Oh, see, he likes it too.
All right. We'll see if we can drum that.
Hamilton's not bad.
Yeah.
Hamilton's pretty good. I mean, I'm going to be the first to say it. I think Hamilton.
You're going out on a limb.
Controversial. Controversial news.
Boy's done good. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the first time I heard about Hamilton, I texted a friend of mine who's very sort of hooked into the Broadway world. And I said something to the effect of, have you heard about this stupid musical that's supposed to be like a hip hop history lesson? How lame. It's going to suck. Everyone's going to hate it. And he wrote back, no, Gina, it's getting amazing reviews. I'm like, okay, a rap musical about Hamilton. You guys have fun. And of course, it's groundbreaking and incredible.
Yeah. It's a huge, it's one of, and I've known Lin-Manuel a little bit for a long time. It is both probably the best musical I've ever seen as a piece. In terms of the integrate, like as there are more extraordinary stagings and there's more, but as a piece, as a concept album, as a piece of writing and performance, it's probably the best musical I've ever seen.
And
still manages to be massively overrated. Only because Americans just really like something. They have to be, it's the greatest thing anyone's ever done, and I'm going to sell my house to get a ticket because it has to be that so I can tell my friends I got a ticket. You know, it's just God, just watch it and say something about it. Don't just say you got a ticket. Reflect on the piece you've asshole. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're kind of that way with, you know, Ellen and Bill Cosby, too. It's like, these are the best people on the planet. These are the worst people on the planet.
How we hate them.
Yeah, the middle, because the middle is so boring.
We don't do nuance well.
Yeah, I mean, everyone loves, when they talk, you know how you know we don't like the middle? Ask anyone, any 45-year-old, what was high school like for you? You're either going to be
greatest years of my life.
Yeah, I was captain of the football team, or I was a failing student. My counselor hated me. My stepdad, no girls. Like, you never get. I was a C student, fairly well liked, but not loved.
Well, and if I may be the Australian who high school was okay for
me. There you go.
But I played some sport. I went to class.
Well, that means you're secure in your own skin. What is Lin-Manuel working as a follow-up, or has he come out with one yet? And then how do you do that?
I should know that. Gina, do you know what he's writing? I mean, he's done all this stuff. Obviously, he did Mary Poppins, too. And he's
Moana.
Yes, in all the films.
In a way, is it intimidating? Like, how do you follow up Hamilton if you're him? How do you do that?
I would like to ask him about that. I suspect he doesn't care because he never has to work a day in his life again. Obviously, he could live 10 lives and not run out of money, but I don't think that interests him. I can tell my super baby version of it with Matilda. Obviously, Matilda's not Hamilton, but it's probably the most successful family musical of our time or something. Something stupid. And I don't care one jot about the pressure of the follow-up. In fact, if anything, I, with Groundhog Day, went kind of more angular and obtuse. And with my next one, I'll go more obtuse because I have no desire to try and follow it up. It totally depends on the personality. But I think Lin-Manuel's probably a bit like me in that he's got lots of things he's trying to do, and trying to follow up Hamilton and have an equal success, he won't even... It's lightning in a bottle. You can't. And I think it would make you very sad to try and emulate your lightning in a bottle hit. And it's what Hollywood tries to do all the time. I worked at DreamWorks for a while. And I suddenly, after working there for a couple of years, went, oh, so you guys think an outlier is the goal. You guys think it's a failure if you don't have an opening weekend as good as Frozen. You guys are nuts. You've got to let lightning in a bottle be lightning in a bottle. And then just pursue good work with a reasonable opening weekend the rest of the time, or you're going to be miserable. And of course, they are miserable.
Well, and good thing miserable. Into the Heights came before Hamilton, because Into the Heights was considered a groundbreaking Broadway success, written by someone no one's ever heard of, named Lin-Manuel Miranda. So that would have been enough.
We have the song. We have the song "Quiet." I think ready to go here.
Well, I have about how an icy St. Red. For example, there's no way of knowing if red means the same thing in your head as red means in my head when someone says red. And how if we are travelling at almost the speed of light and we hold the light, that light would still travel away from us at the full speed of light, which seems right away. But I'm trying to say, I'm not sure, but I wonder if inside my head I'm not just a bit different from some of my friends. These answers that come into my mind unbidden, these stories delivered to me for the written. And when everyone shouts like they seem to like shouting, the noise in my head is incredibly loud. And I just wish they'd stop, my dad and my mum and the telly, and stories would stop for just once. I'm sorry, I'm not quite explaining it right, but this noise becomes anger and the anger is light.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. How old was that? Really well, beautiful. How old was that girl?
Oh, the kid's like 11. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, they were amazing, and it's obviously pretty weird to listen to out of context on a podcast, but it's going somewhere, that song. And it's very different from what I'm writing now, but I don't mind it, listening back to it.
One of my favorites, Ben Folds, is out in Sydney, I guess, until this whole COVID thing blows over. Do you know Ben?
Yeah, I know Ben. Yeah, he's actually going to maybe do a little guesty thing for a streaming thing I'm going to do. I recently played with him on the concert hall stage at the Sydney Opera House. He was a massive hero of mine and has now become a friend who, like, listens to my music. It's one of those pinch yourself things for me.
I have such amazing respect for his work. And
he's an incredible songwriter.
An incredible songwriter, and a thing, and I'll tell you something that's missing, and it's part of the reason why I'm not a big rap genre fan. I like a little self-deprecation in a song. I like a little sense of humor, a little making fun of myself in a song versus puffing myself up. I don't like that genre where you're talking about how great you are. I love that Ben Folds in his songs oftentimes has a lot of humor, and it's usually at his expense. And I like John Hiatt for that reason too. John Hiatt writes great songs, but they sort of have a little joke to a lot of them, and he's kind of picking fun at himself, and I like that.
Yeah, it's a total sort of cultural thing, or not cultural, but it's sort of certain areas of art do that and certain types of people do that. I'm sure there's a heap of self-deprecating hip hop. It's just that I'm not the person to defend it, but it's out there. I do self-deprecation sort of relentlessly. It's kind of how I built my career. Well, and I try, and now I have to battle to not do it all the time because it starts becoming like a bit, as opposed to sincere self-deprecation. It starts becoming humble braggy or something. So I try and not do it all the time.
If there was a genre of rap that was low self-esteem rap, I would listen to, you know, I got a secured credit card. Drive myself a high mileage Camry. Drive it hard. Well, you know what I mean? Like something.
It's white boy rap, but that's what thrift shop is. Macklemore's super self-deprecating. And I actually weirdly yesterday, because I was looking my own song up on the internet because I can't remember, I needed to get the link to the YouTube vid, and I typed When I Grow Up, which is the name of one of my Matilda songs. And there's this like Christian rapper out of somewhere in Massachusetts, something called NK or something. This is how ignorant I am, but he's got a song called When I Grow Up. It's a massive hit. And it's actually very like, I just want to rap, and I know I'm not very good, but I'm working really hard, and I just, all I want to do is be able to like buy a house and give my family some money. You know, it's super low.
Sure.
But again, he's a white boy Christian rapper. So I'm not coming with very good examples. I listen to a lot of Christian rap, as you can imagine. It's totally my thing.
When is for you, you're in Australia now, right? What time is it now for you?
8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. Murky. Thanks for getting up so early. And
sure, you have to get up sometime.
And any thoughts of going anywhere in the near future?
Well, actually, I'm getting on a plane to go to Byron Bay, which is within the state of New South Wales, this afternoon to go and see a documentary. It's my mum fell very suddenly very ill a couple of months ago, and to get to West Australia required all these forms and government exemptions and stuff, doctor's certificates and stuff. So that's we're very tied up. Australia's doing a much more control-y thing than you guys are with your American freedoms. So that's been really awful, because I then had to leave mum, come back to Sydney because my kids are at school and stuff, not knowing what was going to happen with her illness and not knowing how we were going to get back. So that shit, and all my touring's off and that shit. And so the answer is really we're pretty much stuck except being able to go within our own state.
Are your kids able to return to school?
They're at school, yeah. My daughter sometimes doesn't go because she doesn't like it. What a weird world. But, yeah, they're back at school.
Well, see, that's weird because Australia's locked down. We're in Los Angeles. We have more freedom, but schools are all still closed.
Yeah, well, the thing with locking down is you can get your numbers so low. You lock down interstate and international disease passing, you can get your numbers so low that you create a bubble and then you can send your kids to school. And so we're going out to restaurants. There's little bits of socially distanced theater and gigs happening, right. But we can go, we're living basically normal lives, but we can't leave the state and people can't come into the state because that's how you keep your numbers low.
That's New Zealand, right? New Zealand's like leading the world. Everything's back to normal, but stay out.
Yeah.
It's
strange.
Here's an interesting Australia question. Everybody I know and everyone I hear and the celebrities and all that stuff from Australia, they're always super friendly and easy and cool, you know, and it's almost taken on its own personality. Sort of like if you ever meet guys from Brooklyn who are Italian, they're extra Italian and I'm from Brooklyn and get out of here and all this kind of stuff. But part of it, there's a little bit of a facade there, like there's a little theater. And they just like it. They like saying they're from Brooklyn. They like saying they're Italian.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of self-mythologizing, right?
Right. So Australians, the take on them is they're funny and they're easy and they laugh and they're not uptight and they're not divas. Do you feel then, does it become a self-fulfilling prophecy where it's like, I don't want to fuck things up for the nation?
I think there's self-mythology, but it comes just like the Italian Brooklyn, New Yorker thing. It comes from somewhere. And yeah, maybe you feel like you don't want to let the team down, but it's only an average. Like all generalizations, there's exceptions. I think in our industry, if you grow up in Australia and you want to be part of a global entertainment industry, you are clawing from very early. I grew up in Perth, West Australia, and at no point until I was already there did I go, one day I'm going to be on Broadway. Right. You know, I just never, ever. My dreams were one day I might be able to play in a piano bar and someone will pay me.
Right.
You know, because I just, so that the American dream, which says, if you work hard enough, you too can have a gold toilet or whatever that president of yours has, you know, like this kind of like, which has this little undertone of if you tread on enough people, you can be rich, right? There's a little of that under the American dream. Australia has less of that dream, which means when we get there, we don't feel like pumping the air so much. We're kind of like, sorry. Yeah, is this all right? Am I allowed? It's under there, but of course there's arrogant, belligerent Australians and there's beautifully humble Americans, and the distribution of the curve is probably not far away from normalized across the global population.
I always see those damn Hemsworth brothers on TMZ and those guys.
They're assholes.
They're just living life. Like, here's Chris Hemsworth. He went out to lunch barefoot. It's like... And it was like, it's this big day. He's going surfing. The family's going surfing. Everyone's working out and surfing all day.
Chris is where I'm going today to a film festival is where Chris lives. That's, I don't know. Right. I've met him a couple of times. But he quite a while ago, before COVID, decided he wanted to be based in Byron Bay. And since COVID, as far as I know, he's basically said to his agents, I don't want to leave, actually. So if you want to make massive hit movies, you have to come and do it in Queensland. And so that's what they're doing. They're basically moving the industry here so that Thor can keep being Thor.
Wow. I'm going to try that. I'm not leaving the La Cunada Flint Ridge area. I'm sorry. You have to bring the mountain to Mojave.
Isn't that pretty much what you've done, Adam? Isn't that the story of your career? Is you've gone, I'm sitting here and people can come and talk to me.
To be fair, yes, no, it is correct. The warehouse that I sit in, I bought almost 20 years ago to just park a few cars and have a wood shop. As a matter of fact, where I'm sitting right now is where I built my original wood shop. I just thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a woodworking shop and a place me and my friends could turn some wrenches and hang out. And, you know, when the podcasting thing started taking off, I just tore out the wood shop and, you know, built built
when
the studio here.
When I last
here.
Did your podcast, I had to come to your bloody shed.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Who do you think you are, Corolla?
Worst musical title ever. She's on her first period. What the? Okay. We're going to do the news, which would be awesome. So, Tim, you want to hang out and do the news with us?
Yeah, I want to know everything that's happening in America. It doesn't make me anxious at all.
You know what Australia's like is now I think about it. You know, you always think about these different nations and these different countries and stuff like that.
Before you answer, have you ever been?
No. Tell
us what Australia's like.
I will tell you what Australia's like. No, it's what we think of Australia. Australia is to this country a breed of dog that we all like. Like you go, oh, a Labrador. I had a blonde lab. I love that dog. Like
they're
it's fun. It's an idea.
Good with kids.
Yeah, like it's like it's not going to get anything done. It's not like that. It's not
but
like
it's that. Like it's just like you guys see us the same way you see a dog. Is you've got as like oh they're so
yeah
and all the stuff you like consuming from us is really how. Oh, we're quite simple but good-hearted and like Crocodile Dundee and Kath and Kim and shit.
Right.
And it's just like, honestly, our health system and our education system and all that is more advanced than America's by any measure. But you guys think we like have kangaroos and knives and shit. It's pretty mad. It's pretty crazy. But anyway.
Yeah, I think, I don't know.
I don't really mind.
No, it's good. We think of you as a cuddly lab, and then everyone tells a story about how they knew a lab, or they had a lab, or they're growing up.
Yeah. And I plan on getting one in next summer.
Yeah.
No one ever
made meth in a lab.
No one has ever said this. Like, I love Australians, and then someone said, I worked with this Australian guy once. He was a douche. Yeah, they don't. That's never happened.
There's some people in the upper echelons of Hollywood who won't think fondly on working with me, I'm sure.
Yeah. But look, you're just one of those labs you have to get to know.
It does take a personal. So.
Yeah. I don't like, I'm a lab that doesn't like being kicked. Yeah.
Mm. Now, what would, I feel like Russia would be a Rhodesian Ridgeback, even though it's got Rhodesian in it. Yeah. Like kind of big, a little scary, but kind of wish it was on your side. You know what I mean? Like if you're walking down the street and somebody scary came the other direction.
Like a Dalmatian.
Yeah.
New Zealand's one of those feisty little dogs where you go, he thinks he's big.
Right.
He thinks he's a big dog.
Right.
Yeah. Well, New Zealand's like a Jack Russell where they kind of are smarter than everyone else, but tiny.
But tiny, not afraid.
Do anything. Yeah. All right, hold tight. Let me hit a sponsor, Red Cap, here, and then we'll roll into some news. Red Cap, with a K, not a C. Red Cap is one of the oldest makers of workwear in the country, outfitting our essential workforce for nearly a century. They have something for seemingly every industry, from coveralls to high visibility work shirts, oil blocking chef coats, and shop shirts as well. They dropped off the coveralls here. The guys wear them at the shop. We have them here. This is top quality, top shelf, real stuff. They've been around since 1923, I think. So they're doing something right. And right now, you can go to redcap.com. Enter the promo code Adam. Get 20% off your first order. This offer ends November 20th, so get there and buy some top-tier industrial-grade workwear that's perfect for any job. That's redcap.com, redcap with a K, promo code Adam. All right, let's take a quick break. And it's me and Tim from way back
in the other shop.
Orange couch days.
We'll take ourselves a quick break, and we'll come back and do the news with Gina Ball and Tim right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Start out with a couple of stories out of San Francisco. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors has unanimously approved legislation aimed at cracking down on frivolous calls to 911 against people of color. And the legislation is called Caution Against Racial and Exploitative Non-Emergency Act, or KARIN.
Yes.
Although the lead sponsor denies this was the intent.
Oh, come on.
It is KARIN. And of course, the online meme that morphed into a symbol of racism and white lady privilege. The legislation in San Francisco would allow a person, and this is the legislation, by the way.
This
would
is
allow
the inverse of Ernest Lee Bigot being like, I'm just asking.
That's right. Would allow a person who was the subject of a false or frivolous 911 call to sue that person for at least $1,000 if the police responds and has to deal with this.
Well, this will clear everything up immediately. That's what I know.
Well, but couldn't you sue them anyway? I didn't know that we need legislation for.
Yeah, this feels like it should be against the law anyway. I don't need the KARIN law.
Yeah.
Although it's hilarious.
Yeah, I just think this is a little grandstanding. I don't know how you really apply it. I don't know how it works. I've had the cops called on me a million times for zero burgers, and obviously I'm the whitest dude on the block. I've had the cops show up because my phone line got crossed with a neighbor. I've had the cops show up at I had a New Year's party with Jimmy. The cops, it was New Year's Eve.
And that time when you killed a person and they showed up then.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go away.
Had the body in the
freezer. You're like, it's in my freezer. I cleaned it up.
There was a hit and run outside there was a hit and run outside of Gina's house over the weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
The other night.
Sorry. It's funny. The thing that was weird.
Literally ran.
The way your brain works is I was saying I had a New Year's Eve party with Jimmy many years ago, and his ex-wife was Gina. And me and Jimmy and Gina like planned this party. So while I was talking about it, I see this thing on the screen. It said Gina's house. And I was like, I was thinking about his ex-wife and that second. Because she was, of course, at the party. Right. The cops showed up at like 8:30 or 9 o'clock, which means somebody called him at like 7:15 on New Year's Eve.
You want to get out in front of this.
On a Friday night. Yeah. Anyway, you had a hit and run? What?
Yeah. Well, we were just chilling. I think we were watching Contagion or something uplifting in the bedroom. And a giant crash outside, went out. And the dude, it was not just a hit and run. The dude crashed and hit the car in front of our house. Thank God it wasn't ours. Got out of the car and seemed a little stumbly and a little scared and just like stumble ran down the street and took off. Jesus. So there was a big old T-boned hit and run on Magnolia. And I called the cops, the non-emergency number, 7 times. And there was no takers. And guess why they told me the non-emergency line was so clogged? Because in the middle of the night on, you know, Friday, Saturday night, they got so many calls about house parties that they couldn't clean this car up in the middle of the street.
Oh,
so they came.
People were busting people for house parties.
All speaking of which, so we finally heard, you know, beeps and sirens and stuff at like 4 a.m. They came to pick up the car. But I don't know what happened to the dude. One of the neighbors was like, I'm going to stay here in case he comes back. Like, he's not coming back. He ran away from the car because he hit a car. He's done for the night. He's gone. He's not coming back.
Yeah. Also, you want to deal with drunk, concussed, irritated guy when he comes back? Like, why do you even want to deal with that guy?
I don't know. I mean, we have a gate. I made sure it was locked and I was done for the night. But so that's how it's going to roll in San Francisco. Speaking of San Francisco, Slippery Slope guy probably has some things to say about this. A Walgreens drugstore in San Francisco is set to close in about 3 weeks because of rampant shoplifting at this particular location and a couple others. Why is there so much rampant shoplifting at this Walgreens? Well, apparently thefts have been happening there for months and the store shelves are empty or near empty. Most of the remaining product is behind plastic theft guards. And the reason why these Walgreens in San Francisco get hit over and over and over again is because apparently there's a store policy where if it's under like $900, the employees aren't allowed to chase you or allowed to like stop you because it's not worth the employees getting hurt.
Well, in a Walgreens is over $900.
No, that's a good point. No, but if you stuff enough.
Accumulation of money.
Yeah.
So they don't want their employees getting hurt. So they know these are the Walgreens you can hit and nobody will chase after you. And they've cleaned them out so hardcore. This and like 6 other locations, they all have to close.
I'm telling
you. Why isn't it financially smart for them to have 10 security guards who do stop everyone.
Because
like, obviously, you're not going to even them.
Tim. That doesn't look friendly. That looks intimidating.
Also,
doesn't Walgreens sell semi-automatic weapons?
No, that's Walmart.
I'm getting
this
my
just a drugstore.
Pharmacy. Here's the problem. I've said to everyone, unintended consequences. I mean, that is the new world order, which is somebody says, look, there's too many people getting arrested for shoplifting or larceny or whatever it is. So you go, all the guy was doing is he was stealing a bag of chips and a soda. And now we got to put him through the system and blah, blah, blah. And then someone says, why don't we do this? So we don't have this nuisance. Why don't we make a cutoff of $900? So anything under $900, it's not a felony. And, it'll be easier on the taxpayers and it's going to work like a charm. It's like, okay, well, guess what happens? Everyone comes in with a calculator now and like, we're going to steal up to $899 worth of merch. And once you explain, we will not chase you if you try to steal stuff, then everyone goes there. Like, it'd be great if any of this shit ever worked, but it's relying on people to do the right thing. And as soon as they find out one store, they will chase you down the street and kick your ass. The other store, they will not. Then they all just go to the store and keep it under $900 and walk out.
I imagine word spreads pretty fast among a community that's willing to go in and rob drugstores over and over
but
again.
This is
these conversations get derailed by the fact that no one's pulling, I'm sure someone is, but the kind of mainstream isn't pulling apart the different elements of why you punish a criminal. Like, so when you punish someone for stealing a bag of chips, people, you know, liberals like me, I suppose, but even more, will go, it's absurd to punish a person for stealing a bag of chips. That's ridiculous. It costs the state money and it's completely overbearing and blah, blah. And that is, and you're like, yes, absolutely. But there's another element to criminal prosecution, which is deterrence. So the person who steals the bag of chips wants to be deterred from doing so by the consequences being heavy. Right. And so the right wing or, you know, conservatives will go, but we need deterrence. And liberals will go, but we shouldn't be punishing people who are suffering and less lucky than us for stealing a bag of chips. And it's like, yeah, but they're both fair points. And the whole point about law is trying to find the balance, you know.
Well, yeah, it's one of those engineering things that doesn't work. It's my sort of thing that I always say when they go, too many young males of color are being suspended. And then someone goes, stop suspending young males of color and we'll fix the problem. And it's like, doesn't fix the problem. There's a way to approach
circularity.
It.
Circularity.
Yeah, you have to figure out why this is
circular.
Right.
So you can stop suspending young people, but you also have to give them reason to stay in school, you know, just like you can stop punishing criminals. And that stops the cycle of criminality, perhaps. But unless you're also giving people really good education and there's a good social safety net for people who have been brought up in unfortunate situations. So you have to do both.
Yeah.
And I don't know, no country in the world is perfect at that. But I'm not sure America's in the top. I don't know about Australia, but you have to be attacking it from both sides. You can't just stop punishing people. And you can't just punish people. You have to figure out how to educate and support people. Otherwise, they'll keep being motivated to, why the hell wouldn't you
bump
off school? Why the hell wouldn't you steal chips?
You need incentivizing people to do the right thing. So when you say this Walgreens, they won't chase you. Everyone's incentivized to go to that Walgreens and steal shit. That's the way it is. And if you don't discipline students, then they're incentivized not to hang up on the phone call they're on in the middle of class. This is a problem, but it's something we should do a better job with. All right, hold on a sec. Let me just hit 30 seconds of Geico here. Geico.com is where you go. Want to save money on your car insurance? Why not? Why not go to Geico? 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance, and you could do it, do your RV, do your motorcycle, do your home. You can do it all at Geico. So just go to geico.com and find out how much you could be saving. All right, Gina, what else?
Well, there's times where you're listening to Matilda the Musical, or you're listening to Groundhog Day, and you cannot remember for the life of you what the name of that song is, and you have no way to find out. Well, here comes Google to the rescue. The latest version of Google has a new feature where you can sing or hum a song, and it will help identify it. The thing we've all been waiting for. So this isn't just humming. You can whistle it. You can sing it. You can do it, and it will try and pick up what you're putting down. You'll have the latest version of the Google app or the Google search widget, and you'll also have to grant access to your microphone. Then you top the mic, on top of the mic icon, you just put, "What's this song?" and search it. And after you hum it, the algorithm will give you some possible matches. And when I heard this for the first time, my entire childhood came flooding back to me. I don't know if you were all big Married with Children watchers when you were, when that hot. But do you remember this scene from this episode? Because this is exactly what it made me think of.
Green Door by Jim Lowe.
You go to a record store and you find it identified. Right.
Overton Mountain, Claude King, aisle 3.
Flo!
Yeah.
Any day now, Chuck Jackson, aisle 4.
Peg, this guy is a genius. We're home.
Go with him.
Never heard of it.
Of course, I think he's referring to Anna, the Beatles song, but I could, that was the first thing that popped into my mind when I heard this news.
Yeah, it's funny. I was a little bit older than Married with Children, that in that it was sort of like Goonies for me. Like it wasn't a very funny sitcom, but it was kind of iconic and kind of interesting and had its moments. But it's sweet, you know, when you're 13 or 14. But
most important thing of my life for a few years.
But not that funny when you're 23. Like that. Yeah, that's kind of
fair.
That's kind of where it was. Like I was probably, I guess I was pretty into The Simpsons by then. Although this predated The Simpsons.
This is 1990-ish.
Yeah, Simpsons started in 89, I think.
And married. It's a pretty good example of how comedy keeps shifting necessarily. Like, you know, you get people who go, "I hate your stuff, you're just not funny," or back in my day you didn't have to swear to be funny. And it's just like, people don't realize that comedy incrementally keeps shifting because you get used to a certain rhythm of a thing. And you look at that show now and his kind of big double take and his aping, and you just go, "Oh my god, it's so unsophisticated." But at the time, it was right at the edge of what made people laugh, and a whole culture goes with it, shifts with it. Really interesting. I can be really boring about that.
No, it's true. And like bad hairdos on women, you don't notice it when you're there, when you're living in it. Married with Children, 87, Simpsons, 89. So I was right. It was a little bit before that. And I could remember it didn't strike my sensibility very, very well. But it was also, for me, it's like I was looking at, it was like I was looking at a guy with a mullet haircut and everyone was going, "This is super popular." And I was going, I don't know. I don't think history is going to be kind to that hairdo. And I'm sort of that way with Married with Children, but I recognized, Al Bundy. Sorry, I just forgot his name.
Yeah. Ed O'Neill.
Like I recognized he was a talented guy and she was talented, Katie Sagal and all that. And later on, I ended up working on Katie Sagal's house. So it was a big deal for me. I got to work
on
Peg
Bundy's.
Isn't
it hilarious that you can make one of the most successful sitcoms of all time with these incredible writers and actors, and you can become a squillionaire on the basis of it, and then inevitably 20 years later a bunch of punks will sit around and go, "Yeah, it wasn't that good."
Yes. I know.
You can't win, man.
Well, if you want to smell like Anthony Hopkins, Sir Anthony Hopkins, that is, you have a chance now. The actor has launched his own fragrance collection. His perfume is called Anthony Hopkins Eau de Parfum, and it's described as, and I quote, "a timeless, elegant fragrance for men and women that will awaken your soul and unleash what's hidden inside your heart."
Speaking of Oscar.
And the Oscar winner told Vogue about it. Aromas are a form of meditation. They simply change my psychology. Whether I'm playing music or painting in my studio, fragrance creates a mood of peace and invokes a strange sense of gratitude. It also comes in candles and diffusers.
Yeah, the publicist wrote all that, right?
But don't you want to inside your art?
I've got two things. I don't want to know what's inside Adam Kroll's heart.
No, you do not.
And two, I think Anthony's just like, all right, I've got a couple of years left. Let's just bank everything we can bank for my family.
That's right.
Just whatever. He probably said as a joke, put out a scent. Fuck
right.
It.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't.
Or he genuinely loves smells.
Here's my thing. What is he, 77 years old?
Probably.
83.
Is that old? All right. If he had a genuine passion for aroma, don't you think we would have known about it by now?
He would have been known as Stinky Hopkins all these years.
Well, you like playing the piano. I like vintage race cars, and it rears its head every 10 minutes in my life. Like, why, how do you get passionate about something after the age of 80?
Maybe he was embarrassed by it. Maybe he just, you know, ever since he was a kid, he's felt embarrassed by how much he loves perfume, and now he can finally be his real self, live his best life.
2 minutes ago, you were saying it was a money grab.
I'm now
you're defending the man.
Various hypotheses are possible. I'm just examining them.
How old is he? Do we know?
82.
82.
83.
82. You can't get passionate. I don't care if you're selling cologne or a cooking wok. You don't tell me you're passionate about it past 80.
You motherfucker, didn't Paul Newman get into racing in his 80s?
How dare you get into racing in his 80s? He got into racing in his 40s.
I know.
How dare you besmirch his good name. But he didn't
I'm going to come up. You will still be doing this podcast at 80 something. It looks like it anyway.
Yeah.
No, and I'm going to come on your podcast and you're going to be like, do you know what I've just discovered? And I'm going to remember this. I'm going to mock your new passion.
Yeah. You and Anthony Hopkins, right?
Yeah. Anthony's going to be
God
on
rest his soul.
All right. Let's do one more, Gina.
All right. Let's see. Let's find you a good kicker. We're all used to working from home, and some people are even so exotic as to booking a hotel room or an Airbnb just to get away and do some work in a different environment. Well, you can now do it from a Ferris wheel in Tokyo. Remote workers are being lured to amusement parks in Tokyo, which promise free Wi-Fi and the opportunity to use a Ferris wheel as your office desk. For $18, work from home employees will have full access to anywhere in the park.
Funnel cake lunch.
Including on the Ferris wheel. And the best part, after quitting time, anyone who worked remotely at the park gets full access to all the attractions. Sweet day at work.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone's got the inner ear for that, but I feel like a lot of people are going to be yakking on their laptop. Like they're going to be mid Zoom and there's going to be an avalanche of vomit.
No, Jeffrey
Toobin,
no!
That's right. And also, I don't know, full access to the amusement park it doesn't really work if you already have access to the amusement park and you've been working there all day. I get it. But this thing, I think Vegas was doing this, right? Like come to Vegas, sit in a suite, sit in a hot tub, work out of the hot tub.
The high roller or whatever.
Yeah, well, let's really break this down. I don't want work to be that good a place because I want to leave work. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to associate. You guys tell me what you think. I'm a car guy. And I always drive a sort of pedestrian car. It's nothing highfalutin. I have multi-million-dollar cars and race cars and cool cars, but I always drive a very boring car, and everyone is always let down when they see the car I drive. And they go, hey, Adam, you're such a car guy. Why are you driving that Infiniti Truckster or whatever? And I go, because I don't want my everyday car to be special. I don't want to get used to that. Because it's just my car. I won't appreciate it in 4 months. If you got me the highest end Ferrari, I wouldn't appreciate it. Yes.
I've always thought about this with views. I reckon it's if your favorite thing in the world is like going to the beach and looking out and seeing the ocean, it makes your heart sore. And then you make $1 squillion and you get a kitchen with a 180-degree glass wall where you see the ocean, then that ocean then becomes just the backdrop to all your domestic shit, to all your arguments and failed cooking experiments and trying to get your kids to do maths. And you've just turned the most beautiful thing in your life into wallpaper for your horror. I reckon
so
you've got to be really careful. I always thought
poetic
that,
and true.
And then I bought a house with a view, and it was, and it's true.
I take it
for granted. Right out there is the ocean, and I've got a blind shot.
I was going to say, if you ever get into selling residential real estate, don't work the Malibu beach. That's, you are going to be commissionless.
No, but why rich people are miserable? Because they get what they want, and it doesn't help them because what they want becomes part of who they are. They take that what they want gets eaten up by who they are. You know, and so you're, and then you go, oh my god, even a beach view and a beautiful car doesn't fix how
right.
shit a human I am. And that's why they're sad, because they realize that nothing will fix them except like being a nicer person or something.
Well
and
I was gonna say, I've had this epiphany a little bit, or this experience, and you guys probably all have had this too, where I think it was about 3 years ago during Christmas break, we didn't go on vacation, the family, we just kind of stayed home, and we would go out to eat every night. And after about the fifth night in a row of going out to eat, I was like, I'm not really appreciating this like I should. Like, I want to really enjoy this, and I'm not really enjoying it. It's just kind of become the norm. And that is kind of the problem with what you're discussing, which is when we were kids, it was a treat. It was a special occasion. Yeah. There was a little foreplay.
And every mouthful tasted amazing.
Right. It was a little foreplay to it. And once you just...
Anticipation.
Right. Oh, yeah. I believe wholeheartedly, if you want to play the greatest... If you had the worst enemy, of the person you like the least, and you wanted to destroy their life, you would have a magic wand and make sure they got everything they wanted exactly when they wanted it, and they would kill themselves inside of 3 years, or at least be morbidly obese.
Absolutely. And just because I'm here to plug my record, that song you started the show with, Airport Piano, is exactly about this. And it becomes this sort of anxiety attack. Midlife crisis about the fact that we're just clawing to get more stuff, and the goal keeps receding, and it doesn't make us happy. So it's really, really fun.
A not so positive yet poignant note to go out on, Gina Grad.
Indeed, I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Yeah, let me give that album a plug. Apart Together, it'll be available November 20th wherever you listen to music. And if you want to go to the website, timminchin.com, there's three I's in that all together. Hey, Tim, let's not wait so long before we do it again. This was fun.
Yeah, it'd be great to chat. Thank you for having me. It's very nice to meet you, Gina, and Brian. I think I met Brian
as well.
And if you run into Ben Folds, tell him I said hi, and he should zoom in.
I'll be talking to him in the next couple of days, so I'll definitely send him your regards. Call him yourself. Come on, there's technology to do.
You're right. And
it's a good point.
Yeah, if you run into anyone in the Hemsworth family, tell them to kick their shoes off and come on the pod as well.
Okay, no worries. I'll send you at least one Hemsworth. Hopefully the biggest
one. If you run into Olivia Newton-John, all right.
Oh.
I've overstayed my welcome. Thanks, Tim.
Cheers, Adam.
I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Last but not least, Simply Safe. No one should feel unsafe at home, period, and that's why there is Simply Safe. Protect your home today. Get free shipping at simplysafe.com/Adam. Well, we've had an interesting range of guests over the last few days on this show.
This is great.
Have we not? I'll give a little love to Mike August. All right. I'm your emotional support animals, available wherever you get books. Write a review. I'll read them. Live events, West Palm Beach, Florida, Improv, November 20th and 21st. We're doing a live show early, live pod early, and then we're rolling into stand-up after that. Do a matinee show, Reasonable Doubt, with Garrigus on Saturday. And you can go to adamcarolla.com, check out our comedy on the YouTube page. Until next time, It's Adam Carolla for Paul Westhead and Tim Minchin and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan. Say mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Be sure and tell a friend about the show and give us a voicemail or leave us a voicemail or call this number and talk. 888-634-1744. Pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, Navigating Our All-Woke No-Joke Culture. Get it now. All the links are at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.